Laughing is good for you, but when it's been freezing forever and the daily news keeps being terrible, that's easy to forget. One solution is laughing meditation or laughing yoga, where laughing at nothing eventually becomes funny.
Deep in breath on this one, look at yourself in a mirror, or somebody, if there's somebody in the room, take a nice deep breath, as many ha's as you point at them and make the funniest faces you can make. As many ha's as possible.
Forced laughter turns into real laughter. I'm Gina Kaufman, and if that's not your cup of tea, how about a funny book or a joke? Today, we're starting with the jokes. Call 816-235-2888 with your favorite joke or tweet it to us. We are at KCURCST. My guests are joke tellers. One is like a career path and the other just in disposition and outlook. Amira Sanders is a young comic here in town. Hi, Amira.
Hi.
How would you describe your humor?
I describe my humor as pretty dark, but also honest and witty. I draw from experiences from my life and just kind of draw observations from it.
So is it more storytelling than joke telling?
Yeah. It's definitely like more so telling a funny story.
What do you think is the point of comedy?
I mean, I've been thinking about that a lot. Because it's like the role of a comedian, is it to distract people from their issues in life, or is it to bring awareness to certain things? Like, you have this platform and people are much more willing to listen if they're laughing about something. I've decided, at least for myself, that my role as a comedian is to talk about my experiences that people might not know exist, so to speak. It might like not be on their radar.
And so you're finding the funny in those things.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Dan Margulies is our other guest. He is a reporter and editor here at KCUR, and he just likes to tell jokes. He's the son of a rabbi, and his jokes are kind of in the old school Jewish humor tradition. Can I call it Catskills humor? Can I call it that?
Borscht Belt humor, you could call it that, I guess, Gina. Our colleague, Laura Ziegler, calls it grandpa humor.
I guess it depends on who your grandpa is. Well, so this jokes show was actually your idea. You'd heard a joke that you told to a friend of yours who you thought would find it especially funny, and it turned out he'd heard the joke many, many, many times. Remember that?
I don't particularly remember
that
one.
It's like a Russian literature professor or something.
Ah, yes. May I tell it?
Yeah.
So the Russian literature professor is trying to drum into her charge's heads important dates in Russian history. She blurts out, 1799. Blank looks all around. Silence. 1799. Pushkin, the greatest poet in Russian history, was born in 1799. Let me give you an easier one. 1812, she says to her students. What happened in 1812? One of the most significant developments in Russian history. Again, blank looks. Silence. Finally, little Moshe in the back of the room raises his hand. Pushkin's bar mitzvah? So that's one which, you know, Jews would probably appreciate more than non-Jews, but again, you know.
And then your friend, your friend had heard this joke many times. Why had your friend heard this joke so many times, do you think?
I think it's an oldie, but it's a goodie. You know, I actually first heard it in a documentary movie about Yitzhak Perlman, the great virtuoso violinist. And he tells it not once but twice in the course of the movie. Clearly he's enamored of this joke. The first time I heard him tell it with such relish and such joie de vivre, I fell off my chair.
Why did you want to hear a show where people would call in and tell their favorite jokes?
Why? Well, that's a good question. But I think we live in rather oppressive and depressing times. And I think we could all use a joke or two. You know, Freud famously wrote about jokes and their relation to the unconscious. And Freud said that jokes, like dreams, satisfy our unconscious desires. And I think we need that a lot these days.
So what, do you have a favorite joke?
I have a lot of favorite jokes, Gina, but, you know, they all come out of the Jewish Borscht Belt tradition. But I'll tell you one. It's a little on the long side, not unduly long, but because it relates to the Jewish penchant for parsing things, hair splitting, what's sometimes called Talmudic logic. I'd love to tell this one. I actually had to write it down because it's a bit of a long joke, but here's how it goes.
Okay.
After months of negotiating with the authorities, a Jewish scholar from Odessa gets permission to visit Moscow. Now, this is in the days when Jews were not allowed to live in Moscow or anywhere else except the so-called Pale of Settlement.
The joke gets longer when we explain all of the parts of it.
That's the only background I'll give. So after months of negotiating, he gets permission to visit Moscow. He boards a train and finds an empty seat. At the next stop, a young man gets on and sits next to him. The scholar looks at him and thinks, he doesn't look like a peasant, so he probably comes from this district. If he comes from this district, then he must be Jewish, because this is a Jewish district. On the other hand, since he is Jewish, where could he be going? I'm the only Jew in our district who has permission to travel to Moscow. Ah, wait. Just outside Moscow, there's a little village called Samvet. And Jews don't need special permission to go to Samvet. But why would he travel to Samvet? He must be going to visit one of the Jewish families there. But how many Jewish families are there in Samvet? There are just two, the Bernsteins and the Steinbergs. But since the Bernsteins are a terrible family, he must be visiting the Steinbergs. But why is he going to the Steinbergs? Ah, the Steinbergs have two daughters, so maybe he's their son-in-law. But if he is, then which daughter did he marry? They say that Sarah Steinberg married a nice lawyer from Budapest, and Esther married a businessman from Zhytomyr. So it must be Sarah's husband, which means that his name is Alexander Cohen. But if he comes from Budapest, with all the anti-Semitism there, he must have changed his name. What's the Hungarian equivalent of Cohen? It's Kovács. But since they allowed him to change his name, he must have special status to change it. What could it be? He must have a doctorate from the university. At this point, he turns to the man and says, excuse me, do you mind if I open the window, Dr. Kovács? Not at all, the startled co-passenger replies. But how did you know my name? Ah, he says, isn't it obvious?
Oh. It's so much work for
But the payoff, I think, is good.
And I love that you – obviously, there's some place you could go to look up all those details that are – it's built into the joke that you would not remember all those details, which is – brings me to my problem with jokes is that even the ones that make me laugh, I've forgotten them by the next day. I'm like – if someone's like, tell me a joke, I'm like,
My wife has that problem. She says she can never remember a good joke. And her father, my late father-in-law, was a great joke teller. He was a veritable encyclopedia of Jewish drollery and witticisms. And unfortunately, his daughter did not record all these things. And so she'll come up with the beginning of a joke, and then midway through, she'll realize she doesn't remember the punchline anymore.
I forget my own jokes. So it's like, people always ask me, like, oh, what's your favorite joke? Who's your favorite comedian? And I can never tell them an exact joke. I'm just like, watch their special. There's this one part. It's about a dog. Like, you'll know it when you hear it. Like, I even with movies, like, no one remembers exactly what happens in every movie that they watch. Like, they get the general
and idea. And it's partly in the delivery.
Yeah. But it's like how it makes you feel. Like, did it catch you off guard? Did you really relate to it? And I usually remember, like, how it made me feel. And that just kind of makes me remember the comedian that did it and how they make me feel. And then I already know, like, their jokes are going to be worth listening to.
What makes a joke or a bit work from your perspective?
From my perspective, with stand-up comedy, it's, like, a little weird because one night, like, a crowd will be really into a joke or a bit, and then one night they won't be.
It's just the vibe almost.
Yeah. I mean, at least for me personally, bits and jokes that I like are usually very relatable. There are some people that kind of do like one-liners, like wordplay and stuff, and I do think that's funny, but I always like
Dimitri Martin or someone.
Yeah, yeah. And I like jokes that I'm like, I can relate to that. I can put myself in. Like, I really like John Mulaney because he, like, draws from his life and his childhood. And, like,
I love – he has this whole thing about how his realtor is, like, the cool mom. And she's – or someone who's trying to be the cool mom. Like, I can get you in, though. Like, it's – You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's just things that you can, like, you either know someone like that, or you've been in a situation like that, or it's like, or you know someone. I think if the more you can connect to it, to your own life, like, the funnier it is, because it's true.
So just thinking about where a person is coming from, whether it's your political leanings, your race, your religion, your age, do you think that that shapes style of humor in some crucial way? Because I've always felt like if someone's telling, there's usually like some shared understanding that makes a joke funny. And if you don't share that understanding, it's not going to be funny. And that's not going to be a statement of like, oh, you have a sense of humor, you don't. That's just a sense of like, we don't agree on the thing that makes this funny.
I mean, I've had people who have had different life experiences and different political leanings come up to me and say they thought that my joke was funny, even though it didn't really match up with their way of thinking or like what they know. And like, even like, I have a joke about mental health in the Black community, and like, I'm in Missouri, so a lot of my crowds are white people, and they probably don't know like the different interracial things that happen within Black people in America. But I tell this joke and they're like, oh, I never thought that was like an issue. I never thought that, you know, that was something like, they laughed at it. They thought it was funny, but now they also know something about a community they had no idea about before.
Are you able to tell that joke?
Okay. Yeah. So my mom is listening. Mom, is just disclaimer. I made this joke up. Okay. Chill out. I struggle with depression a lot. And this is a new joke, by the way, so I've been trying it out. So I had struggled with depression before, and I was trying to tell my family that I have depression, and there's like a common sort of saying, misconception in the Black community that depression is for white people, like mental illness is for white people, mostly drawing from the fact that like Black people, we don't have time to be depressed. We don't have the luxury of being depressed or having an illness in any way, so to speak, let alone one you can't even see. So I had this joke, like I went to my family saying, hey guys, I'm depressed. And they were like, oh, Mary, you can't be depressed. You're Black. That's for white people. And so to like drive the point home, I've only been responding to the name McKaylin. And it's spelled M-A-Q-U-E ?LYNN, because I see a lot of ridiculous spellings of McKaylin. So I just feel like that might be one of them. I've been trying to tell that joke. Some people like it, some people don't, but I like it because it really relates to an issue within the Black community that a lot of Black people know about, and the kind of absurdity to only responding to the name McKaylin is what I think people sometimes wish they could do with their family, just be that petty to be like, no, this is a real issue and I'm gonna make you look at it.
Well, let's take calls with favorite jokes at 816-235-2888. We've got Greg on the line in Kansas City who has a favorite joke to share. Greg?
Hey.
What you got?
All right. These two guys are walking down the street. One's got a Doberman, one's got a Chihuahua. And the guy with the Doberman says, hey, let's go in this bar and get a drink. It's hot out here. And the guy with the Chihuahua says, we can't go in there. We have dogs. They won't let us in. And the guy with the Doberman says, well, we'll just tell them they're a seeing eye dogs and they have to let us in. And he walks in. And the bartender sees him. He says, hey, get out of here with that dog. You can't bring a dog in here. And the guy says, no, no, it's my seeing eye dog. The bartender says, yeah, right. A Doberman? And the guy says, yep. But I found out they're real smart. They're real good at this. And that's what they're using now. And the bartender says, oh, all right. So the guy with the Chihuahua walks in, and the bartender sees him. He says, hey, get out of here with that dog. You can't bring a dog in here. The guy says, no, no, it's my seeing eye dog. The bartender says, yeah, right, a Chihuahua. And the guy says, what? They gave me a Chihuahua?
I like that.
Oh, Greg, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Anyone heard that one before?
I haven't.
I had, but it's still funny, and Greg told it with great relish. And
it reminds,
made me laugh.
It reminds me of the I'm afraid not jokes. Mm. You know? You guys know that. Like, rope walks into a bar. We don't serve ropes. Rope leaves. Another rope comes in the bar and says, we don't serve ropes. Leave. Then the two ropes tie themselves together, come in and say, I told you guys we don't serve ropes. Didn't I tell you guys we don't serve ropes? I'm afraid not.
Yes. The lowest form of humor. A pun. for which I'm famous.
Agreed. Okay. Fred is with us from Westport, and Fred has a joke for us. Hi, Fred.
Hello. I was listening to you earlier, and you were talking about not remembering things. And I just want to let you know I'm about to turn 73, and I can't remember the last time I forgot anything.
Is that one of your favorites?
Ka-ching.
It works. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Fred.
But I live in the asylum.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Fred. Okay, so I do want to bring up, though, Amira, we were talking about earlier that, like, you're still working on one of the jokes that you just shared. How do you work on a joke? Because maybe that can reveal to us, like, why a joke works or doesn't.
Every comedian has, like, a different process. Some people write it out, and they, you know, have several different punchlines that they'll try out on stage. I started doing comedy, like, with improv. So what I do is, like, I come up with a general premise for a joke, come up with the beats that I want to hit, and then I'll take it up on stage, and I'll do the joke. And because I don't have a set script for myself, I can kind of ad-lib and, like, add what I want in the moment. And if I say something that works in the moment, I remember it, I write it down, I incorporate it into the joke, and it kind of just kind of builds from there. It's just how it feels, like the timing and everything, because I feel like it makes it more natural because I did it in a natural way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk to Carol in Overland Park. Hi, Carol.
Hello.
Tell us your joke.
Okay, two couples are playing cards on a Friday night, and at one point, the two women get up and go into the kitchen to get snacks, and the one guy says to the other, "Hey, Frank, every Friday night, we've played cards for years, and I always have to remind you of what's been played and what's been bid, but tonight, not once." Frank says, "Well, that's because I went to this great memory school." So the other guy says, "Well, that's wonderful. What's the name of it?" And Frank says, "Wait, let me think. What's the name of that flower? It's usually red. It has thorns on the stem." And he says, "A rose?" And Frank's like, "Yeah, that's it, a rose." And then he yells into the kitchen, "Hey, Rose, what's the name of that memory school I went to?"
Nice.
This is like it's like a companion joke to Fred's that he just told.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Carol, what do you like about that joke?
I just think it's classic. I don't think you see the ending coming. I think it's, you know, you think you know what's going to happen because he can't remember the name of the school. But then when he comes up with, this is what he has to go through just to remember his wife's name.
So this,
I think it's hysterical.
The unexpected seems to be a big part of what makes a joke work.
Misdirection, definitely, yeah.
Define misdirection. See, this is like the humor jargon I don't have.
Misdirection, displacement, verbal inversion.
Yeah, you know, it makes you think that you know where the joke is going, and then the comedian or whoever's telling the joke just throws you off. Either like you end up thinking something that's like, oh, that's I know where this is going, and it's like probably not the best thing to think, and then the comedian, like, you know, turns it around, and then you're
swerves.
Like, oh, joke's on me almost, yeah. And it makes it so funny.
Amira Sanders, Dan Margulies, thank you both so much for anchoring this joke segment.
It was a pleasure.
My pleasure as well.
Let's do it again.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard. And now we're going to bring on the Bibliophiles. They've brought in their favorite books for humor and laughs. Those recommendations coming right up. Stay with us. We are back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard. We just heard some jokes. And now for the more introverted laugher, we've got books that will make you laugh. Call 816-235-2888 with the book that absolutely cracked you up. 816-235-2888. Our bibliophiles are here, and maybe they can offer up some titles with a similar style of humor. The bibliophiles are Katie Stover of the Kansas City Public Library. Hi, Katie.
Good morning, Gina.
And Mark Luce of the Barstow School in KU. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
And Jeffrey Ann Gowdy. She is a freelance journalist and book critic for the Huffington Post. Hello.
Well, actually for other publications.
For lots of publications.
Yeah, hello. Good to be here.
So, everyone, We're going to be talking about humor in books, but Katie, you have some insights into how to recommend humor to other people being a librarian. So before we dive into those recommendations, want to share some of that wisdom?
Well, doing reader's advisory for patrons that ask for something that will make them laugh is difficult. That's probably one of the toughest questions we get in libraries. When you ask someone, what are you in the mood for? And they say something funny, and we have no idea what that means. Something funny is equivalent to good writing. We don't know what that is either for the person we're working with. So the first thing to do is, since it's so hard to determine, is just ask a few cursory questions. And we want to find out what it is that tickles the reader's mental funny bone. Do they want pratfalls? Do they want knock-knock jokes? Do they want satire? So because humor is very personal, and the reader wants to connect with whatever it is they're reading so that they can recognize the humor in the situation.
Or
so,
like, is it escapist humor? Is it...
Yes.
Like, there's some very funny stuff that takes you to some places that, depending on what you mean when you say, I want something funny, you might not be ready to go.
Right. So we ask, what sort of tone does the humor you like take? What sort of mood are you in? And we ask that, and we get a conversation going, and most of the time we hear what people think isn't funny, and that is very helpful. And or we hear why they want to laugh. So they want to laugh because work is stressful, or politics are infuriating, or there's just general bleakness of life. And that gives us a better direction in which to go to suggest something to read. Because the humor is personal. So memoirs and essay collections, and I brought a couple with me, you try to match the reader with the author's character so that they can recognize the same sense of humor. They can see themselves in the author's work, in the memoir, in the memoirist, in the collection of essays.
Can you give me an example of something that has done that for you? Like from your list, the one where you're like, I saw myself here and I was laughing.
Oh, that would be local author Jen Mann's People I Want to Punch in the Throat. Because deep inside, if you don't know me, I'm really very cynical, and I love the witty cynicism that Jen Mann brings to her work. She looks at all these situations, and like me, it seems like her default emotion is annoyance, but it's annoyance with fun. And I like that. It's what I also like about this book is that I only need this sort of humor in small doses. I just need one or two snippets, one or two chapters, and then I'm calm, I'm funny, I'm smoothed out, and I can put down that book, and I can go back to it when I need it. And that's what a lot of folks use these books for. They just need something to take the edge off, and these humor books do it for them. And then it's like, okay, that's enough of that, because anymore...
I can function now.
Yes, I can function now.
So People I Want to Punch in the Throat by Jen Mann.
Yes.
Mark, what about you? You have entire lists here, but the one where you're like, I can see myself in this. I have a companion in the recesses of my mind now. I'm good.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then I'm going to go with a one-legged old man who I have the most in common with. His name is Bill Veeck. He's long since deceased. He was a baseball owner. But he was...
Like a team owner?
He was a team owner. But he was a showman. And he isn't like the stodgy kind of owners today that are filled with, you know, like accountants and analytics guys. He played to the crowd. He famously once said that basically the cheaper the seat... Or the more the cost of the seat, the less intelligence of the fan, which is sort of really, really funny. So he owned the Indians, the St. Louis Browns, and the Chicago White Sox. And here are some of the stunts that he did. They had a cow milking contest, cupcake giveaways, beer blast. They had a midget that batted, Eddie Gaedel, who famously was signed for a one-day contract, went in the game and walked, and then immediately came out of the game. They had Shakespeare night. Fireworks, jazz bands, ladies' days, first guy to put names on the back of the uniforms. And my all-time favorite, when I was 9 years old, I was watching the Chicago White Sox. We lived in Davenport, Iowa. And the Chicago White Sox were on WGN. Harry Carey was the play-by-play, and Jimmy Pearsall was the color man. And so he had a disco demolition night. Vec hosted this disco demolition night, and it went horribly wrong. It was supposed to be in between a doubleheader, and fans started throwing records at the players, and it turned into an all-out riot. People stormed the field, set fires, guys stole home base. Absolutely insane. And so Vec's streak of mischief speaks to me on a absolutely fundamental level.
So it's, in this case, he's telling his life story, but the life story is full of crazy things he's done and all things, kind of pulled off.
Yes. I mean, he had to sort of jump through all kinds of different hoops to stay an owner. But he's got a mischievous streak, and he's got an anti-authoritarian streak in him that I celebrate.
You can relate to.
I can relate to, yes.
So that's...
It's Vec as in Wreck.
Is the name of the book.
That's the name of the book.
It's pronunciation instructions and a title all in one. All right. And Jeff, what about you?
I think that the book I most identify with that I brought is Maria Semple's Today Will Be Different. And she wrote for television for 15 years, shows like Arrested Development, and she's often laughed out loud, funny. And this book is less broadly satirical than her first two, and it features an earnest character named Eleanor. And she begins the book with a soliloquy, "Today I will be different. Today I will only wear yoga clothes for yoga, and I will actually go to yoga. I will buy local. I will be my best self." And since I'm kind of an earnest person, I really identified with her. So this book is very deftly plotted. It takes place in the space of one day. And on that one day, she starts her day, because she's very earnest, with a poetry tutorial in which they're discussing Robert Lowell's Skunk Hour. And because I knew that a friend of mine was actually meeting with the actual Maria Semple, it's Ed Skoog. I knew that it was a stand-in for Ed Skoog with this poet, Alonzo. But anyway, she gets this phone call from her son's school. And her son is third grader Timby, and he has a tummy ache, and she has to pick him up. And she takes him to the doctor, and the doctor said, you know, frequent tummy aches are often have emotional roots. And so Timby spills the beans that he's being bullied at school. So Eleanor goes to the office of her husband, who's a hand surgeon for the Seattle Seahawks, and he's not in his office. And the staff says, well, he's out of town. Don't you know that? So she thinks he's having an affair. So there's the screwball chase. Timby's kind of the straight guy to Eleanor. And it turns out that her husband's secret is not actually sexual, but spiritual.
Well, which can be awkward. He's on a religious
holiday. Yes, he's become spiritual.
Lover
is church.
Is this fiction or is this?
This is fiction. Yes, I should have said this. This is a novel. And
A
funny novel. And it has the annotated Skunk Hour by Robert Lowell. It has a inserted graphic memoir, and it's often laugh out loud funny.
So the name and author of this book again?
Today Will Be Different by Maria Semple.
Let's start with one of our callers. We've got Amanda with us at 816-235-2888 with a favorite funny book. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What do you want to share?
One of my favorite authors, and I've been reading them since I was, oh my goodness, maybe 12 or 13, is Robert Fulghum. He wrote All I Ever Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. But he started writing because he keeps these daily diaries or journals, and they're usually just these short entries, but his family, upon reading through some of them, said, you should really publish these. So he did. I really loved his True Love book. He sat on a corner to set up a little booth and collected love stories from people, whether they were 5 or 50. But my favorite of all time is his book called Uh-Oh. And I often give that instead of condolence cards because it just covers the span of life. He talks about just all different, the crazy things we do in life. Like when we're doing laundry, he'll take shots and use a static plane to stick it to his sweater. Or He talks about watching his neighbor walk through a spider web and the hilarity of that. He just takes these everyday things in life, and it's like he's observing these things and how funny and how just how beautiful they all are. I love his writing.
Well, Amanda, thank you. What I love about Amanda's call is that humor often, like a joke, there's like a joke that has a butt to the joke, and like where there's sort of a victim of the joke, or there's some dark thing. And it sounds like this is a kind of humor that reveals just joy, which is, that I think is a hard to find kind of humor.
I think of him as sort of in the same boat as kind of Irma Bombeck. It's like it's more of a feel good comedy rather than a the butt of a joke or something sort of dark.
Life is a bowl of cherries, but you only get the pits.
Right.
Yeah.
That sort of humor is for that sort of humor. The purpose for that is for folks to recognize themselves, to see these situations that if you're experiencing them, they're not, there's nothing funny there. You're embarrassed or you're sad or you're annoyed. And then to these authors put a spin, put a more charming everyman spin on the situations. And that's where you find the humor in them.
We had a listener who could not stay on the line, but had a recommendation for a book. I'm not going to say the title because of broadcast, but so this is an adaptation of the title. Turning the Snow Yellow.
Yeah.
Anyone familiar with that? It's Turning the Snow Yellow in quotes and Other Ozark Folk Tales by Vance Rudolph.
I'm not familiar with that one.
It is apparently a catalog of 500 jokes that all other jokes are based on. So that's an interesting concept. But we'll get back to our critics lists. Katie, you are recommending Good Omens.
Yes. That, I'm one of the few people that had not read Good Omens until last year, and I know that it's coming out as a streaming series very soon, but I listened to this, and it is witty, irreverent British humor about good, evil, a missing baby who just happens to be the Antichrist, and it's...
Oh, I love the missing baby thing.
It's good versus evil, and it's two angels, Zerophale and a demon, Crowley, who's kind of an angel, the flip side. And they have been frenemies through the ages, and they don't want to see the end of the world, not because of any great love for humans, not really. They really like the stuff that goes with hanging out with humans. They like motorcycles and fine wine and all their other luxuries. So they don't want end times because they're having a fine time right now. So they have to try and find the baby and make sure that the baby does not, that this missing Antichrist, make sure the baby doesn't bring on the end of the world.
And this is particularly funny to you.
Yes. It's particularly funny in audio because the narrator, I'm drawing a blank on his name, the narrator takes all the witty the witty prose of Neil Gaiman and the uproarious situations of Terry Pratchett, and this narrator can handle all of the characters, the men, the women, the children, all the tones. And this is not an easy thing to do. So listeners will be able to keep track of all the characters and hear the quietly witty turns of phrase that are easily overlooked in print because you'll be turning the pages very quickly. Good humor has you turning the pages quickly.
Mark, I am surprised by something on your list. I'm surprised that on your list of five funny books that you could talk about,
I know exactly what you're going to say.
What?
You're going to say Jane Austen.
Yep, Persuasion by Jane Austen.
It's hysterical. It's absolutely hysterical.
Tell me more.
It's basically a dating game with three sisters. I absolutely adore this novel. I think that the father, Mr. Elliot, who's the stodgy patriarch who doesn't want to give up his estate, and he certainly doesn't want to give up his estate to a Navy man, but he's broke because he's spent through all of his money. The oldest daughter is Elizabeth, right, who has been waiting around to get married for 30 some odd years, right, and she's to the point where no one is really going to like her. the youngest daughter, Mary, is the one who's always like, hey, where are you guys going? Can I come? And then there's an absolutely hysterical scene, which, like, I know that concussions aren't funny, but when Louisa tries to jump into Captain Wentworth's arms and he's not paying attention and she falls and cracks her head, absolutely hysterical. And then she ends up being in love with the moody poet guy. Like, there's time
who
after time,
thunk it?
Time after time in that book, there are things that are absolutely hysterical.
Persuasion by Jane Austen. We are talking about humor in literature, any genre, as you can see. 816-235-2888 is the number to call with the book that made you laugh out loud, preferably in public. I'm Gina Kaufman, Central Standard. We'll be right back. We are back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard. And we are talking with the bibliophiles about the books that made them laugh. You can join the conversation at 816-235-2888. We need some funny books, so pick up the phone and call the number and tell us what to read. Katie Stover, Mark Luce, Jeffrey Ann Gowdy, welcome back.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Okay, so I'm going to share a couple of staff recommendations real quick, because I always ask my colleagues here what books they would recommend for our various themes. So the books that make KCUR employees laugh. Lots of KCUR staffers are PG Wodehouse fans, which I find surprising, kind of.
Like, I don't.
It just, like, but I find it surprising that it's KCUR staffers of all ages that find Wodehouse funny. Any Wodehouse fans wanting to share here?
Jeeves is funny.
So that Jeeves is a character slash series of books by P.G. Wodehouse, British author.
They're pretty, I mean, it's a certain kind of humor, but those are pretty good.
Arch.
Yeah, they're arch. It's sort of like Raffles or like it's like British dudes behaving badly. And that's funny.
I have had a laugh out loud Wodehouse reading moment in my life, and it's from a collection of short stories called The World of Mr. Mulliner. There's a character, this does not sound funny. And actually, like, if I read it today, maybe I wouldn't find it funny. But whatever day I read it, it was. There was a character who stuttered and figured out that he could prevent stuttering by singing instead of talking. And there was a woman he wanted to talk to, and he was on a train. And it, like, there was all sorts of chaos happening on the train. And he finally gets his nerve up at sort of like the climax of all this other kind of chaos and just starts singing Tea for Two at her. And she's very confused. And this sounds so dumb. And it does. And I realize that. But there's something about the way it was set up that just worked. And so you can't re-summarize it either, because the setup, the plot, the pacing, and all the different things that were coming together in this, like, kind of zany moment, that's what makes it work. Or not, depending on your taste, I guess.
It's hard to describe the books you find funny to someone else who's asking for a recommendation for something that's funny. We do this every day in libraries. But it's very, even all of us talking about the books that we think are funny, when we describe them, if we sit back, we think, oh, well, I don't know why that's funny. Mark just
the
told
explaining him. The explaining the joke.
Right.
It's like
right,
the more you
right.
explain the joke, then the less funny the joke becomes.
I mean, humor is personal. But if you find somebody and you laugh at the same things, you know that you'll be their friend, right?
Yes. Yeah, totally. Yes. Linda Scher recommends Born a Crime by Trevor Noah, which is generally speaking, I think, not humor. Unless it's the story of how he was born into an interracial couple during apartheid, making his existence illegal in that political context. But I guess there's a really funny scene in where he as a child thinks he can poop on the floor without getting caught because the only other person in the room is blind. and I won't continue explaining, but the scene that ensues from there is apparently really funny. And I would say that this fits maybe in the category of comic relief, where the story itself, the larger story, is not funny. And then this one funny thing that you put at just the right time where the tension is high can really, like, amplify the humor.
Yes. And if you... Trevor Noah does the audio for that book. And so I listened to that scene and was just laughing in the car while driving, because it's funny. You can see the child's mind at work. You can hear Trevor Noah emphasizing the right parts of this situation to get the most out of the laugh for you. And there are other funny parts in that book as well. They're a little more serious, but it's the way Trevor Noah sells the situation so that you can see what's funny about it.
Augustin Burroughs is someone else who I think does this well. He has this book, Dry, all about his alcoholism, which is not funny. But he drops these funny observations when you're feeling sort of stressed about what's happening in the book and you just, like, crack up.
But yeah, I was thinking about how personal humor is. I finished this book recently, Severance by Ling Ma, and it's a dystopian novel. It won a huge literary award last year. And then I looked on the back of the cover, and somebody said, this is the funniest book that was published last year. I'm like, what? It's a devastating takedown of consumerist culture. So it's satire, which is a slyer humor that makes you wince more than you laugh, I think.
Yeah. Okay, so quick other KCUR recommendations, and then we'll get to our callers and our critics. We have so many suddenly. Okay, Madeline Fox of the Kansas News Service recommends Patricia Lockwood's Priest Daddy, and Patricia's Localish. Anyone read that?
I haven't read it, but I saw her do her shtick in Lawrence, and she is hilarious. She's very funny.
And she's been on the show if you want to check that out. There's also Linda Scher is also recommending Just the Funny Parts by... forgive my pronunciation, Lynn Scavell. She's a television writer, co-wrote Lean In with Sheryl Sandberg, apparently, but also wrote for The Simpsons coach Murphy Brown. And apparently she reveals some of the jokes she wrote for President Obama for his last White House Correspondents' Dinner that he did not use. So if you want to read the jokes that Obama did not use from his joke writer, apparently that part really tickled Linda. And... why don't we get back to our critics and callers with the little time we have left? We have, let's see, Mary is on the line from Tremble, Missouri. Hi, Mary.
Hello. My recommendation is a book by Mike Leonard, who took a month off from NBC to give his family, his parents, who had been married 60 years, what he thought would be the ultimate family reunion. He rented two RVs. He had three grown children and a daughter-in-law. And it's just hilarious. They go from the Southwest to New England. His 87-year-old father is a pathological optimist with gift of gab. His mother is the exact opposite, and it just made me laugh out loud.
Well, Mary, thank you so much. That's the ride of our lives.
Yes.
All right. And I love a pathological optimist. I'm stealing that. Let's talk to Stu in Olathe. Hi, Stu.
Hi. So I guess, first of all, if you're just looking for any book that would make you laugh, anything by Tom Robbins or Christopher Moore is a safe bet.
But lots of nods in this room.
But my favorite is Confederacy of Dunces.
Tell us more.
So John Kennedy Toole, unfortunately, committed suicide before the book was published, but it has this incredible, it's a long novel based in New Orleans, and I read it on my way to New Orleans and on a road trip, and I was laughing out loud so much that the other guys were going like, what is going on with you? You know, the main character is Ignatius Riley, who is a philosopher and also a hot dog vendor in New Orleans. So...
Well, thank you, Stu. Thank you for that recommendation.
Yes, that novel was absolutely hysterical.
And painful that the author committed suicide before.
Yeah, there's a really interesting story about how his mother ended up pushing to get that book published.
That book is on lots of lists for people, funny books.
Let's talk to George calling us from Lee's Summit.
Hello there.
What's your funny book to recommend?
Well, it's basically anything written by Gene Shepard, but the two that come to mind are one is called Wanda Hickey and a Thousand Magical Nights, and the other is called In God We Trust and All Others Pay Cash. Now, his style is, his book would be an overall story. He's telling you a total story, but each chapter is a funny story into itself. See, each chapter is a you laugh out loud combination. Now, you all probably know the movie Christmas Story, you know, Shoot Your Eye Out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that movie is actually a collection of various chapters from those two books.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, George.
But I would recommend you, Shepard, anything he writes is great.
Thank you, George. Okay, so we're going to quickly, before we go, get one quick recommendation from each of our critics. What's it going to be, Jeff?
Going Into Town, A Love Letter to New York by Roz Chasto. I have to be quick here. This is a love letter to the borough of Manhattan. And Roz Chast, of course, is the beloved New Yorker cartoonist. And she grew up dissatisfied in Brooklyn and then fell in love in Manhattan. And this originated as a booklet for her daughter when her daughter was going to college in Manhattan. My daughter lives in Manhattan, and I wish I would have read this before I went to see her, where it's hilarious. And the wildlife, the bed bug, the cross streets, the grid. It's actually a very handy guidebook to going to New York.
Going Into Town, A Love Letter to New York by Roz Chast. That's how you pronounce that?
Yes.
Okay. And Jeff, I'm sorry.
And it's graphic also, graphic book.
Awesome. Mark, your recommendation that you need to get in here.
There's a book that I read years ago on a recommendation of my friend Chris called Florida Roadkill by a guy named Tim Dorsey. And I have never read anything quite like this. It's very Florida. And the main character is this guy named Serge Storms. Get it? It's like Storm Surge, but backwards. who really enjoys sort of killing people. And he does it in these like horrific and crazy ways.
This
like,
sounds awful.
It is, but it's hysterical. Like in this book, there are three bikers, but they don't have bikes. And so it's just sort of zany and madcap run through South Florida with sort of detective, sort of satire. And it's just always sort of stuck with me as this is about the most outrageous book that I think I'd ever read.
So outrageous is the type of humor that you would call this.
Yes.
Okay.
Dark.
Outrageous, dark humor, Florida Roadkill by Tim Dorsey. And Katie, what about you?
I brought Honey Hush, an anthology of African-American women's humor. And I love this book because it's a fantastic collection of humor of all types. It's broad, it's deep, it's varied. There's essays, poems, there's speeches, there's comic routines. Whoopi Goldberg's Fontaine segment is written out in this. There's sayings, there's illustrations. It's risque and dramatic. It is touching and charming. It's always eloquent and witty. It's also a little eye-opening to see what's considered humor in this book that we might not consider funny now. But it's a wonderful collection. It was put together by an academic, Daryl Cumberdance. Cumberdance. She's got a few snippets in here, too. But the foreword's by Nikki Giovanni. And there's some real heavy hitters in African-American women's literature in this book.
That's awesome. And just as we were coming out of the break, you said that The Last Cattle Drive is one that made you laugh out loud.
Right. Whenever I really need a pick-me-up, I grab this book. It's a Western, and I love it because I used to teach this book to my Comp 1 students who thought that they could use four-letter words in their essays. And I would teach segments from this book, letting them know that until you know the rules, you cannot break the rules using that language, because this is a raunchy, real language of the Western Kansas cowboy. This is not swearing for the sake of just dropping an F-bomb because Bob Day doesn't have a better vocabulary. He does. It's the way he uses this language that tells you an awful lot about the lead character, Spangler Tuchel. So you laugh at Spangler when he's in one of his cussing fits, the way you do when you're 8 years old and someone's farted. It's unexpected. It's uncontrollable. And this is an adult giggle fit of a book.
Bring on the whoopee cushion.
Yeah. We have a lot of recommendations we couldn't get to. We have people on Twitter recommending things. Something by Sir Terry Pratchett. We have Anything by Dave Barry is being recommended. People kind of have their favorite humorists, but you can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCURCST if you want to hear what people are talking about there. Our time is up. Thank you for being here, everyone. The bibliophiles are Katie Stover, Mark Luce, and Jeffrey Ann Gowdy. They recommended funny books today, and we talked about jokes earlier in the hour. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
So tomorrow we will be back to more serious content from a possible split in the Methodist Church over a ban on homosexual clergy to questions about why this winter is so terrible with the meteorologist. Tune in for all of that tomorrow at 10. You can catch anything you've missed on this show at kcur.org/Central Standard. Central Standard is produced by KCUR's Melody Rowell with Chris Young, Coy Duggar, Suzanne Hogan, and Salisa Kalakal. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next. Don't miss it.